Right now, protests and the power of Buddhism in Myanmar. The streets are reportedly quieter in that country after weeks of enormous protests against the military government. The demonstrations were led by tens of thousands of Buddhist monks in saffron-colored robes, and when the military cracked down, many of them were beaten or arrested, and some were killed. But in a country where the government uses religion to help justify its power, the monks are now at the center of the fight for Myanmar's future. As Philip Delves Broughton put it, he wrote about that fight and Buddhism's place in it in a piece that ran in the Wall Street Journal last week. He joins us now from our bureau in New York City, and thanks very much for coming in.
Good afternoon.
And if there was a choice to be made between the military government and democracy, the monks appear to have chosen.
They certainly do, and I think it's been a long struggle for them. I always think it's very easy. It's much easier in the West if you think about the monks in Myanmar more like the Catholic Church than the Dalai Lama. You know, they're a force in society that has long had to deal with the realities of politics. And this spate of incidents has shown that they struggle very much within themselves. Do they support Aung San Suu Kyi in her struggle for democracy, or do they bet their survival on a group of generals whose behavior in many ways goes against every one of the basic tenets of Buddhism?
Yet they've obviously struggled with this. They for many years, seem to be living quite well alongside the military dictatorship.
Well, they've survived, and I think that has always been an issue. I mean, there are all kinds of tenets of Buddhism, Theravada Buddhism, as practiced in Burma, that would go against political involvement. Life is an experience to be lived and suffered. It's merely one phase. One is always striving for nirvana. It's not something where you should complain, and suffering is actually a part of Buddhism. And I think for many of the monks, the situation in Burma has just been something that they deal with and tolerate. But of course, there comes a point where they can tolerate no longer. They can't cut themselves off from the society they live in. They have to react. And what happened in the past 2 or 3 weeks was a provocation of the monks that has happened time and again throughout Burma's, certainly the last 100 years of its history. The monks have been provoked to action, but it takes a lot to do it. And when they do rise up, they're the one force in society left that can really scare the military.
Mm-hmm. The conscience of the country, as you describe them.
Well, I think they are. If you look at Burma since 1962, when they've had a military government, almost every other social structure in this country has been gutted. The universities have basically been closed down for many years. The educational structure is just barely existent. The civil service has become a military establishment. If you want to be a doctor, you have to serve in the army. So what's left in the country? Well, there's a very strong Buddhist tradition, and there are 400,000 monks, as many as there are soldiers. And so when one looks for hopes that Burma will change, that human rights will be advanced, one has to look to them as the conscience of the country and as really the only other structure in the country that can stand up to the military.
Mm-hmm. Yet their influence is so pervasive that you write the military generals have long used Buddhism themselves.
Well, it's extraordinary. If you read the state newspaper, The New Light of Myanmar, almost every day, the lead photo is one of a general and his wife visiting a temple, paying tribute to the head of the monastery. They constantly gild and regild Burma's famous golden pagodas. Temple building was always used by the Burmese kings in previous centuries as a way of kind of establishing a claim on territory. So they built temples in northern Thailand just to say, we were here once and this is now ours forever.
Mm-hmm.
And the generals have done this again in the ethnic territories in Burma. Burma's, you know, essentially a country that's been in civil war for the last 50 years. And they build temples in areas of the country that are more traditionally Christian or Muslim to, again, establish their control, establish the Burman claim on these territories. And they've also used the philosophies of Buddhism, as I spoke about, this wheel of suffering. Why are you complaining? Why are you fighting against us? This life is merely temporary. It creates this apathy in society that they stoke. They really want to see people apathetic because, of course, when people looked around at their condition, it's not a pretty picture.
Yeah, you describe a tenet called samsara, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, which you describe as everything is impermanent, life is hard, and feeling powerless is not a consequence of a political situation which might be changed, but an existential fact, thereby let the military run the country.
I think that's right, and I think it's deeply frustrating for, you know, those of us who do care about Burma to see the degree to which a combination of extreme oppression and fear and, I think, apathy on the part of many people in Burma. We've seen these movements flare up, these pro-democracy mm-hmm. movements. We've seen Aung San Suu Kyi, who's a remarkable woman. But I think often people ask the question, why isn't there more pressure from below? And I think this is just one element. I'm not saying it's the the entire explanation, but I think it's one element, it's one tool that's, again, used by the military as part of their relationship with the monks. They discourage people. They say it's anti-Buddhist to oppose the government. It's to fret too much about the material things of this world to stand up and oppose. And I think that is an important element. If it's not the whole reason, but it is an important element.
There was another telling moment, the last round back in 1988, when the monks stopped accepting the alms, the gifts of the generals.
Well, that's absolutely crucial, because in Buddhism, you give to monks. They're a familiar sight in Burma, the monks walking down the streets all day with their bowls asking for food, and everyone gives them something. No matter how poor you are, you give something. And for the generals who control all the economic assets of the country, they were able to give more than anybody else, and the more you give, the more merit you earn. The monks, by refusing to take the generals' gifts, are essentially saying to them, we are no longer going to be the means for you to gain Buddhist merit, essentially saying you're not worthy of us. And that is the greatest slight they could give. And I think that's perhaps the action that sends the greatest shivers down the military spine, to be rejected by the monks themselves, is essentially a slap in the face from, as I said, the national conscience. Mm-hmm. It's a recognition that what they do is unacceptable in every single way. And this comes from the one set of people whose opinion they care about.
Yet, did they change their minds and start reaccepting those donations?
Well, they're a strange bunch of these monks. I think a few of them have. The truth about the monks in Burma is they are a divided group. There are many who are passionately opposed to the military. There are many pro-democracy activists from the 1988 generation, which is the last great democratic upheaval in Burma, who joined the monasteries as a way of protecting themselves. It was really the only institution they could join to avoid going to jail. And I think, on the other hand, there are monks who work hand in hand with the military. They have been co-opted. The monastic orders are very much divided. After the 1988 protests, the government set up, they essentially nationalized the monasteries through an organization called the Sangha. And they created a set of laws about what monks could and could not do, the kind of orders they were allowed to become members of. So you see the efforts the military has made to incorporate the monastic orders into their own structure of government. As you saw, it hasn't really worked. Mm-hmm. But I think there will always be monks who are ready to cooperate, and there will always be monks who say, no, this is not the Buddhist way.
Well, another thing that clearly hasn't worked, if some of those monks, some of those people became monks in order to seek protection, the monasteries were raided. Those monks were hauled out and beaten and arrested, and some of them were killed.
And I think that's the ultimate affront to Buddhism. And I think when you read the military's defense, they always say it's essentially like a human shield argument, that they're essentially democrats who are hiding behind the skirts of the monks and using the monasteries to launch the democracy movement. That's the military's argument. So when they say they're invading monasteries and taking monks, they say they're taking democrats who are hiding behind the monks. But yes, in the eyes of most Burmese, to go into a monastery and desecrate it and haul people out is an appalling crime, as it would be in any country.
Mm-hmm. And what happens now, I guess, is the question. Obviously, those big street protests have ebbed, if not disappeared.
Well, today we learned that the Burmese government has assigned the Deputy Minister of Labour to act as the liaison with Aung San Suu Kyi, the Nobel Peace Prize laureate, who's still under house arrest. This is apparently what the UN Delegate Ibrahim Gambari asked for last week when he negotiated with the generals. But can one be optimistic about this? It's hard to be. We saw all this happen in 1988. In fact, Burma went a lot further down the path of democracy then than it appears to have done now. What I think is terribly frustrating for everybody on the outside who saw this extraordinary moral uprising is how little one can do, what stranglehold the generals do have on the country, how little follow-up there has been. I think it's frustrating for people in the West not to see Burma's Asian neighbours doing more. And I think it's frustrating for anybody who cares about democracy and human rights to be so shut out of the country and to know so little. We know so little about what the fate of 1,000 or so monks. Still, we don't know what's happened. We assume some of them are in prison, some of them have been killed. But the information is so scarce that I think it's deeply frustrating and a real concern for anyone who cares about Burma.
Mm-hmm. And the dispatch of a UN envoy, this establishment of a liaison, is that going to be enough for, particularly you mentioned Burma's neighbors, especially China, its most important neighbor, is that going to be enough for them to say, well, look, everything's moving along and we can just go back to normal?
I think that's what everyone would like to say, especially China. Burma has been theoretically on a process towards democracy for the last 20 years or so. It's an incredibly slow-moving process and one in which it's hard to have any confidence. The Chinese, everybody knows, they have the Olympics coming up next year. But I think, you know, we all know that the Chinese have enormous economic interests now in Burma. They depend on Burmese natural gas, its access to the Indian Ocean. Burma is a small, if useful, market for Chinese military supplies. You know, we depend on the Chinese to as the people who have the biggest voice with the Burmese generals. And it just doesn't seem as though the Chinese are interested in this from a human rights and democracy perspective. They're interested in it from a stability perspective and a reputational perspective with regard to the Olympics. But I don't think the Chinese government has shown that it's particularly interested in it from a human rights and democracy perspective.
Philip Delves Broughton, thanks very much for being with us today. We appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Philip Delves Broughton is a writer based in New York, and he wrote a piece about the Burmese monks and their role in politics for the Wall Street Journal. You're listening to Talk of the Nation, which is coming to you from NPR News.